Dead Belt. True Tales of the Gasping Frontier is a space folk horror anthology podcast, and as such may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Ah, oh, hell. Where were we?
We are none of us, Milo Grigg. So when the rep showed up and set the envelope and the cred swipe in front of Milo, he picked it up. You do the job that's in front of you. The black contract had flagged the Aquarius the moment Milo had started systems on his ship. It had provided details on the payday. Captain's command console, data core, intact, no copies. This was a soft seal job. And then he drowned. Aquarius' tanks must have ruptured somewhere between here and there. Still winnable, though. Do the job that's in front of you. They were supposed to be living on CO2, passed through the scrubbers, and the heat of environmental systems. How the hell were they growing like this? You know, rich full day indeed. The job in front of Milo Grigg was getting increasingly eerie. Nope. Do the job that's in front of you. What was bad was that through the impact-rated plasglass, the airlock hatchway, Milo Grigg could see the bodies. The data core was spooling, but he had to know. It wasn't the job that was in front of him, but sometimes you just can't let it lie.
Whatever went wrong with the patch, it went worse for the cutworms. This is Eli North, Captain of the Aquarius. I need to believe that anyone hearing this will understand why we didn't wait.
Right. Okay. So. Somewhere in the midst of all that, Milo had missed the notification chime that the transfer on the central console was done. Data core lights winked on. Captain Eli North smiled like a saint to self-destruction in his captain's chair. Milo took his time spooling up his cable and stowing the drive in his carry-all, checking the overpressure twice. You know, it'd be a real tragedy to come all this way and dumb luck stumble his way through the worst of it all just to find that he'd soaked the payday through when he was safe and sound and burning for home, after all. He blew out of breath and stepped back toward the airlock door. Oh, but stars and an empty night, he dreaded the swim. The cutworms ain't really worms. They share more in common with water bears, point of fact. Tardigrades. They, like the belt ivy they were genetically modified to graze on, were adapted to long lives and hostile environments. Their physiology made them suited, but they were selectively bred for size, stamina, and voracious appetite. They chew down the stalks of the patch, leaving hard resin leaves alone. Keeps the water flowing through the hydro system without any impediment, and that ensures the patch stays solid. While they ain't supposed to be large enough to really get a good look at them in any detail, they are eight-limbed little squashy bugs with a face like a doughy worm. The tongues. Radula. Or radula, I guess, if we're being precise, like biological chainsaws. The thought of cutworms big enough to consume a person in a suit. Tell you what, I'd probably not be looking forward to swimming either. Milo stood watching the hatch with wary eyes for a space of about 30 slow breaths. The globular clusters of algae floating outside the double doors, pressure lock, had subsided into their habitual soft glow, fading from the challenging brilliance they'd put on as Milo had passed them. That was a good sign. Maybe Eli North was right, and the cutworms had followed the crew of the Aquarius down into darkness and death. Maybe Milo Grigg had gotten lucky. He could stand there and argue with himself about maybes and could-bes till they wrote some other poor belter into coming to look for him, but that wouldn't do the job, would it? Milo patted the pocket of the carry-all, held his payday, and took a few brave steps toward the airlock. The door slid open, and he stepped into the chamber and punched a button. A warning appeared, announcing in bright red letters that he should prepare for decompression in 10 seconds. The microprocessor ran all of its integrated checks in a fraction of that, but minimum safety for accidental decompression incidents requires that enough time for human reaction time and second thoughts. Now there was sweat on Milo's upper lip. Back into the water. Only now that water had gotten all the more sinister. It was one thing to idly stroke through an empty bird with all the vegetation in darkness and the pressure of full water hauler tank of backflowed hydrogen monoxide. It was quite another thing entirely to know that you were sharing it with something that probably wanted to eat you. 5 seconds now. He shifted his weight from foot to foot, feeling like a goldfish in a bowl. He hazarded a glance back toward the command deck and his three dead spacers, one last tableau of violent desperation. North, in his command chair, presiding like a suicide king over his court of panicking crewbies. They could maybe held out on that command deck for a while, right? Sure, they couldn't reach the galley, but with the crew comfort locker up there, they had emergency rats and maybe a water bulb or two to keep them going for a few days. Sure, there'd be hard choices after the fact, but gas hounds were supposed to be coming. Hell, they had come. Too. And then immediately called it a loss. Surely they wouldn't have just given it up the moment they opened that lock and they saw the Aquarius had turned into an aquarium, right? What had they seen? One. The hydraulics pulsed and the water flooded in. Cold. God damn, ruinously cold. Even through his coverall, it came in a wave as the doors opened wide. The heater pack spaced throughout the coverall whined as they kicked into high gear to keep the bubble of breathable gas inside the suit at a temperature relatively comfortable. They were fighting an uphill battle. Milo pushed forward into that cold and murk with a will, but he didn't get 5 floaty, night terror steps before the globs of displaced phosphorescent algae bloomed into startling light. The glare cast a shadow on the far end of the corridor, but it weren't the twisting, wrist-thick patches that he was expecting. This shadow was the size of a large dog, maybe 5 feet long, lumpy, misshapen. Like a nightmare made of Ma's best biscuit dough. The cutworm flicked its tongue inquisitively. Then it began to move. Fast, faster than it should have been able to through water. Those 8 legs churning water as its back half arched porpoise-like. Milo must have screamed as he thrashed backward toward the closing lock, but I doubt he'd tell it like that. Cutworm was only a half second behind him, but Milo is, as I've mentioned, a smallish type belter, and somehow even in his hand-me-down coverall, he managed to squeeze through that lock before it shut tight. Cutworm only got the tip of his sawtooth murder tongue into the gap behind him before the doors met, pinning it fast. And yet the denticles, those little organic teeth on the meter-long organic chainsaw, rasped back and forth, vainly trying to cut into the working edge of the door. Console beside Milo chirped a warning. Milo hammered that override button.
Caution, seal impingement may result in catastrophic decompression.
Milo was beyond Karen. He hammered the override button again, pressing himself back against the interior door. The 10-second countdown was a lifetime as the water drained away and the decon routine chirped more helpful alarms. At the end of that lifetime, Milo fell backwards in the command deck and locked that door. The doors, as I hazard I have said before, were plasglass. So Milo still had eyes on the cutworm. Only now he had eyes on 3 of them. First was still trying to saw through the hatch into the airlock when the first of the command deck's escaping atmosphere hit at full force. The first 20 centimeters of its lashing, cartilaginous tongue writhed on the floor of the now sealed hatch. The rest of it was clouding the water beyond with a pale pink ichor as the cutworm slammed bodily into the doorway. 2 of his buddies had slithered out of the watery tomb to follow the commotion in hopes of a warm and wiggling meal. They were taking up flanking positions. Milo thought about the stoved-in bulkheads aft. The STD Mark IIs were not made of no-plas glass. Anyway, the hatchway into the forward airlock was starting to spiderweb. With the other 2 starting to get the point and throwing their own bulk against the doors. Yeah, they probably weren't going to last long. That left Milo in the same basic position as the corpses on the command deck. Hungry worms outside the only exit and help a perilous long way away. He looked over to Captain Eli North and the sidearm in his hand. The Aquarius's old man's lips drawn into a smile of peace, Griggs reached out with a shaky hand, casting a look over his shoulder at the cutworm's progress. They're making headway. plasglass so shot through with broken lightning that he couldn't have much more than maybe a handful of minutes before they were on the bridge with him. He had to think fast. Choose fast. Milo pried the sidearm out of Eli North's hand. Slug throwers, the kind of working pieces that use a small explosive charge and rapidly expanding gases to hurl bits of metal at supersonic speeds, these are not good ideas in a tin can flying through the void. See, them kinds of things tend to put holes in the soap bubble, and then it, along with everything in it, tends to pop. That's assuming, of course, that you're even in an environment where you can get an explosion and rapidly expanding gases to function reliably. Sure, most cartridges carry their own oxidizing agent and can go bang in space just fine, but the variances in temperature means that moving metal parts freeze and fail, or a spontaneous discharge if they get hot enough. And that's why most folk who carry arms into Nullgrav go in for slivers, mag-propelled flechette launchers, or boarding irons, souped-up hand riveters if they're in a pinch. Both of them are nasty weapons and will provide all manner of hurt to folk on the other end, but they'll keep damage to the vessel that both the aggressor and defender are doubtless fighting over to a minimum. See, Eli North, though, he was carrying an antique. Not a safe, trusty sliver or a boarding iron, but a slick black Kruger Helms Eagle 12, the Concordat's favorite void-borne companion. Caseless, 45, electronically fired, military-style pistol packing subsonic, frangible slugs. When Milo wrapped his hands around the pistol grip, the LEDs on the sight lit up. Still juiced. Milo licked his lips, racked the slide, and one of the friendly silver projectiles spun away from the chamber. Still loaded. He turned to check on the worms. They'd forced the door half off its tracks and were bending it inward, their squashy biscuit dough faces pressing into the airlock along with a steady torrent of water. Milo did the arithmetic. Three dead crew meant at least three slugs down. One ejected and on the drift, he reached out, idly, unconsciously, to pocket the orbiting projectile, tucking it into his fittings pouch. That mean maybe eight in the mag? Is that what 12 and an Eagle 12 meant? Eight rounds? Three worms? Well, maybe. Be a bad time to click empty when they were on the deck with him. Worse, since he'd never really had occasion to fire a weapon in anger before. There were bad odds. Even he was familiar with the killing machine in his right hand. Think, Belter. Think. No way out but through those worms. Now unless... Milo looked back at the front of the command deck. The impact shields, heavy blast screens meant to avoid collision damage and the like, had deployed over the plasglass canopy, but... Now that was still the plasglass canopy. If he could get them shields down... Milo hurled himself at the captain's console. All the workings were still laid bare from when he'd been hooked into it to download the data core. Wouldn't be hardly nothing to slice in and retract them screens, but he was kinda under the gun here. The worms were in the airlock and starting on the door behind him. Don't think about it, though. Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast. Do the job that's in front of you, because what's behind you just ain't helping. Seconds crawled. The worms were a battering ram of three heads and rasping chainsaw teeth, but that green light came on, and the shutters, with agonizing slowness, began to retract. Milo took aim as soon as he saw stars, and the Eagle 12 barked silently in his hand. Twice. Three times. The glass cracked. The doors cracked. And the Eagle clicked empty. Canopy had three neat holes cored through, and a lightning-struck nest of cracks radiating between them, but it held solid. Milo looked down at the gun in his hand, the solid black bit of metal and ceramic that had been his hope. Hadn't even saved a round. And the worms was coming. But Milo Grigg was going to be damned if he sat here and waited for him, so he gathered himself down into a squat and he pushed off like a rocket for that view screen, put his hands over his visor and tucked himself into a fetal ball, and he hoped. There was a crunch and a shrill of alarms and damage readouts, and it felt like a swan dive into the street, I expect, but you know what? The street gave. And he was adrift. spacewalking. Milo lacked the cowboy's taste for extravehicular activity, but the shriek of joy he gave just then, to not be in the fishbowl with the worms, was pure exultation. I figure any cowboy would have given him a pass. He engaged his mag boots, angled himself as best he could, swimming through the void to be feet first toward the Aquarius. Then he dumped his emergency O2 tank, used it as an impromptu thruster. Now that made a whole new host of flashing red alarms come to life on his heads up, but his heels met Platon with a satisfying clunk. Just in time for all that water come flooding out the hole he'd made in the command deck's front view screen. Well, I say flood, but we both know there ain't no floods in Hardnull, don't we? It froze. It exploded. It ripped the whole damn face off the Aquarius. The acceleration as the Aquarius proved Newton's third threw Milo onto his back, and his skull rang as it crashed around inside his helmet like a pea in a tin can, but above him, through his swimming vision, Milo counted cutworms as they went afloating away on a plume of frozen shards, broken glass, and alloy. A one, and a two. Only two. Which meant number three still a threat. Milo sucked in a big breath and began the laborious process of righting himself and adopting the mindset of difficult snack. Lying on the plate and had been nice. The idea of a long nap as his vision had faded around the edges and his helmet's HUD had flashed with warning messages had been a welcome one. But that last hellfire and ruination, he hoped it was the last. That last cutworm wasn't going to catch him napping. If it was hungry enough to wander out into the vacuum of space after him, it was going to have to work at catching him. Milo's joints hurt, all of them. The kind of non-specific ache that starts behind your eyes but rapidly engulfs the rest of you into a throb that keeps time with the beating of your heart. His boots were heavy, and the jostle had kinked one of the electromagnets onto full blast, so every step on the right side was a wrench, but hot damn, he kept moving. He had to pick his steps careful. Plating was broken, cracked, mangled. Every section of the delaminated hull could just easily come away as hold steady as he wrenched his right foot up and off. He tried to stick to the larger sections, but picking around patch is tricky business, and it's slow going besides. The aft was worse. The patch had grown so thick that it had turned into a mat. Milo had to crush it underfoot and hope the magnets were strong enough to stay positive even through wrist-thick spacefaring kudzu, and that was before it started wriggling. A razor-toothed tongue shot through the patch like a hummingbird tempo buzzsaw. It snaked out, reaching for Milo, who could only limp away as best he could. He considered the empty pistol, still clenched in a death grip in his right hand. If he survived this, he would send so many angry waves to Kruger Helms, demand to know why the Eagle 12 only held 7 rounds. God damn if he had only had one more round. His eyes went wide, and he reached into his fittings pouch. Cutworm sawed through the vine with the single-minded fervor of a wood chipper who'd learned hate and hunger from a legion of overthrown angels. Milo dropped the bullet into the chamber. He released the slide. When the cutworm muscled its head through the network of interleaving vines and flicked its tongue experimentally in Milo's direction, Milo was already lining up his sights. He squeezed the trigger. The bullet left a gray streak in Milo's vision and a pink furrow through the cutworm's squashy face. Milo could see the stepping razor through the hole in the overgrown critter's head. That would be 3 worms right there. Of course, standard complement of cutworms was supposed to be a stable population of 120, so Milo didn't hazard to feel unsafe until he'd strapped himself back into the acceleration couch on board his ship. Milo ain't a belter anymore. Not really. He don't scrap. He don't salvage. Doesn't hit the belt proper like the most of us, but you'll find him at the last call. He'll be at one of the tables near the back. His cred swipes mighty, but he drinks cheap. Still frugal. His eyes focus on doorways waiting for dark suits and mirrored spectacles to cross the threshold, because once you run out of jobs in front of you, the ones half done behind you tend to haunt you. He figures the rep might think that way too. You know, Milo still carries that Kruger Helms, I hear. Shows it to whoever asks. Of course, he don't never leave it empty. And if you come asking about the rep, yeah, Milo will tend to show it to you barrel first. Belters. Now that was a long transmission lag, wasn't it? Sorry about that. I got a case of the chrome lung back there in October, and it fair kicked this whole station down below the red line for about 3 months solid. Since then, it's been one minor tale of woe after another. Yeah, but you know how it goes. We keep going. Y'all, I want to thank a friend of mine, Rook. He's an old hat who first brought Patch to my attention. I don't think I could have gotten this one together without you, brother. Since I've been scarce, there have been all manner of new and interesting developments on the belt. And we got ourselves a fully kickstarted and realized version of the tabletop game that inspired this whole venture with double the content and three, count them, three of these here black contracts for y'all aspiring belters to tussle with. I'm going to put a link in the show notes in case y'all want to check that out. But we're back now, belters. I'm going to try and get myself squared away, make this a less infrequent wave schedule so as y'all don't get too lonesome out there. And hey, y'all hear everyone about the Wake Angels? That's next time. Thank y'all so much for listening to Dead Belt, True Tales, the Gasping Frontier. If you enjoyed this production, we would certainly appreciate a rating or review on your podcatcher of choice. If y'all want more Dead Belt, feel free to check out Dead Belt, a solo and co-op tabletop role-playing game by a couple of drakes. Y'all can find that at a couple of drakes.itch.io. If you gotten it, played it, maybe died in space a time or two, we appreciate ratings and reviews of the game as well. I want to thank y'all for sharing this station with the other belters out there. You know, that kind of thing gets us in front of the eyes and ears of more folks, and that's essential for keeping our content flowing. And it means we ain't alone out here. That's a blessing, ain't it? Dead Belt's growing. So too must we. That's all for now, belters. Let's do it again real soon, shall we? Cheered out.